first of all, I mean, a huge thank you to Ruth. I'm going to come back to the report in a bit, but it's very rare that I really see something and read something that truly shocks me. And I was horrified by some of the accounts of what happens in today's NHS and how dare it happen in today's NHS. And we've now, I've just agreed with Barry, we'll be holding our first meeting in the Better Employment work stream on the 15th of May. We're going to dedicate that whole meeting to this report and what we can do from that work stream and support the department to do to address these concerns as a matter of urgency. The Better Employment work stream has a wide range of membership. We try to be inclusive. If we've missed you out and you want to be part of it, send me an email. More than happy to have people on board. It's really important to recognise that the chairs do this on top of our day jobs. We don't get time in our work plan to attend. It depends on how supportive my boss is, whether I take today as annual leave or whether it's something that I can do as part of my job and I don't have to take additional leave to do it. So we do need support. We need people that are willing to muck in and help. And that's really important because it is a huge amount of work that still needs to be done. So what have we done so far? We've commissioned two reports on homophobia, one last year and one the year before. We supported the Health Summit, we supported a presence in the Floating Pride, and we supported some new initiatives like the health panels, which have been hosted by the Greater London Authority to really increase the engagement between the community and the NHS. The first report is on the website, and there are two reports, one which we did with Inclusive Services looking at monitoring of sexual orientation amongst staff in health and social care, and one which looked at harassment and sexual orientation. I mean, the key points that came out of this, monitoring was saying, actually, staff monitoring is not rocket science. Lots of organisations have done it. It is important that we have the policies in place, that people understand what's going to happen to the data, but this is not something that's hugely complicated, and the NHS should be getting on and doing it. If the police can do it, why can't we? We're not that special. Harassment and sexual orientation showed that actually the policies are out there in terms of reporting that actually trusts do have discrimination statements. The problem is HR don't necessarily read them and don't necessarily know how to enact them. And the staff don't necessarily know that they are protected by them. So there's a way to go on awareness raising. The second report, which I'm going to talk a little bit more about, which Ruth referred to, I think when it does hit the public domain, you will see quite why I'm so shocked, why those of us who've read it have been very shocked and disturbed, because the kind of behaviour that people reported was the kind of stuff that I thought happened 40, 50 years ago, kind of pre-Wolfenden type behaviour. Not that happens now in 2007. And these were all contemporary reports from people. We asked for people who'd experienced homophobia since the legislation came in 2003. So it's not that we're talking about stuff that happened in the 70s. It's happening now, and this is unacceptable. The key recommendations, it's training, training, and training. And I think some of the things that we have done, the top 10 tips, I am so pleased. It's taken us 18 months to get here. We finally got them, and it's really important that we get them out there and that people start using them and getting that very basic level of understanding, which is so shockingly absent. We need to have robust, accessible policies, visible role models, explicit, effective disciplinary procedures. This kind of behaviour needs to be come down like a ton of bricks. It is unacceptable. If this was racism, the NHS would not tolerate it. We would not tolerate our staff to behave like it. And it's unacceptable we tolerate homophobia and transphobia like this. And we need more visible LGBT staff networks. It's been really good. Surinda supported a letter with Ben Somerville that went out to Trust to promote the guidance from Stonewall. And that was really good, but we need the next step. We need HR managers. We need PCTs. We need Acute Trust to recognise there is value and actually they're going to get something back. I was really pleased earlier last week to go and launch the Royal College of Nursing's national LGBT network, which is a fantastic step and acknowledgement from the Royal College of Nursing of a population within their membership that too long has been silent and unrecognised. And if they can do it, we can. So some of the quotes, I'm not going to read them out, but this is disturbing. This is what people experience. And if people experience this and believe this, are they going to be able to commit to patients? Are they going to be able to deliver good patient care? Are they going to want to remain in the NHS? Are they going to believe that the NHS is a place that's welcoming? Are they going to recommend it to their staff, to their friends, to their colleagues? Or are they going to say, no, go and work in the private sector. BEPA might treat you a bit nicer. They'll pay you a bit more as well. So why come and work in the NHS when this is the kind of behaviour that you hear and see? And it's not just nurses, it's not healthcare assistants, it's admin staff, it's surgeons, it's managers, it's throughout the organisation. One of the keynote panels at this year's LGBT Health Summit in August, which I hope you're all coming to, is asking the question, is the NHS homophobic? Institutionally homophobic and transphobic. Quotes like this mean that question's not a silly one. This is the lived experience, which beautifully leads me on to the Health Summit. 2006 saw the launch of the Health Summit. Fantastic that we had support from EHRG and the Department of Health. Was really pivotal, I think, in bringing together many of you who are in the room, but many people who can't be with us today, who actually came together for the first time. The power of the trans voice, which really hadn't had the opportunity to engage with the LGB communities. Trying to hear the bisexual voice and the bisexual communities, and we still need to do further work in future years to recognise that we are a community of difference. That the L, the G, the B and the T all have powerful voices, and it's not a competition to be heard. We all can be heard, and this is one of the great spaces where we can do it. There are summaries on the website. You can also get details about 2007, and we're really grateful that the department once again is supporting us along with a range of other sponsors. And this year we've got over 300 spaces. So get in there, get registered and come to Manchester. It's a bit like going to Hogwarts. It's rather a wonderful space. And I will be finding something suitably appropriate to wear. The theme for this year's summit is Choices, Voices, Knowledge and Power. And it really is about reflecting on what can we learn from each other? How can we get our voice heard? How can we get the skills shared? How can we become a powerful movement for health in the LGBT community? Pride London. Some people have said, well, why London? Well, because it's here, and frankly, I do this, and I'm here, and I've only got so many hours in the day. But what was really incredible from the health professionals' float in the Pride Parade is actually the coverage we got. We were in Nursing Standard, we were in BMA News, we were in Hospital Doctor. Actually, the healthcare professional press did carry us and have continued to support us in the press. It's a fantastic partnership, and we're really grateful that people like the Royal College of Nursing, the Department of Health, have come forward with funding year on year to support this really visible and powerful commitment to LGBT staff in the NHS. This is the flyer for this year. And if anyone wants the flyer for their trust or to get it out there, this is the one that's for the RCN, and Dominic's email's actually wrong on it. So email me and I'll get you the most recent one, which also we now have clearance, has the Department of Health logo on it, which is fantastic. And both Dominic and I are wearing the beautiful badges from the RCN that they're also producing to promote the event. The community health panels, as was alluded to earlier, this year we weren't able to get the high-profile speakers like the Chief Medical Officer we've had in years before to mark LGBT History Month. What we did manage to do was hold a really groundbreaking community engagement event at the GLA in London, which allowed the NHS to come face-to-face with the lived experience of LGBT patients in the capital. And we were incredibly lucky that the Regional Director of Public Health, Sheila Adam, came and sat on that panel. And she, again, is a lady not easily shocked, but her face through the meeting betrayed that actually she was sitting there and hearing new things, that this was a new experience. And the resonance and what that has actually meant is that Sheila, I understand, has met with the trans community separately to discuss health inequalities in London, and we have the second panel, which is on Tuesday night, to discuss gender reassignment surgery, is really being taken forward as a first step of engagement. It's been a long time coming, but the door is open. We need to make sure we're pushing through it and that we're engaging and we're there. So what else is going on? LGBT Health, the Yahoo group, is going from strength to strength. We're up to about 250 now. I'm getting about 2 new registrations a day. As a national network and email group for people to share ideas, some of the really interesting, challenging discussions around trans identity, around asking questions around people's sexual orientation, about considering some of the questions in the LGBT community that haven't necessarily seen the light of day yet. Drugs, alcohol, mental health and suicide. These are as big a priority for us as hate crime and HIV, and we need to make sure that they are discussed. The Health Summit's coming, the RCN I've already mentioned. There's been some really useful guidance from the TUC and Press for Change around asking the trans question. And actually, we're all kind of scared about asking the sexual orientation question. The trans question is I found actually interesting, much easier to ask using that Press for Change guidance. And the really good thing I would say about it as well is it gives you three different questions, so you can choose which one you like best. And we've been using it with the GLA panels, and it's been really well received. So looking forward, some things to kind of spark you and think about after lunch and the discussion. The 2011 census, the battle's not done. The fact that the Office of National Statistics don't really want to ask the question is irrelevant. Write to your MP, faxyourmp.com, fantastic resource, use it. Stonewall, I'm sure, will be producing briefings when we really need to mobilise. But 2007, 2008 is when the decisions are made about what goes in and what goes out. If we don't get the question in, PCTs, local authorities, will not commission because there will be no evidence that we exist. So really important. Also important, a little bit further ahead, but the planning's starting now, and next year marks the start of the Cultural Olympiad, and where's the LGBT? Across the country, there are regional networks that are supposed to represent the diversity of their population, and how the voice of the LGBT is put in. We got the Olympics on the basis of a legacy of health, a legacy of health improvement and social well-being. So we need to make sure that they deliver for our LGBT population. And the way we do that is get our voice in there. Monitoring and data collection. It's difficult. We've got diverse views. But actually, at the moment, the issue is if you can't measure it, no one's going to spend money on it. Because this is the new world of the NHS. And this is as ruthless, if not more ruthless, than the private sector. We need to understand the market that we work in. And we need to understand that data matters. And actually, sometimes we're going to have to compromise to reach that the gain for all. Training, training and training. I can't say training enough. It is essential that we get out there and we do training. That projects like the work that Graham's been doing with Health First, that really the word has got out, that people start to use it, that the 10 top tips are get out. Word of mouth within our community, and the trans community is a great exemplar of this. We did a soft launch of the gender reassignment panel about 2 months ago. I was rung up by people from the clinic, some of the healthcare professionals working with trans people, who went, my patient's asking me about this. They're incredibly well networked. We need to use those networks and get it out there so that patients are going, actually, this resource is here. And when they contact PALS to go, I've had a shit time, and my doctor's been homophobic or transphobic, and actually as a trust, you can ring up the Department of Health and get these leaflets and get some training resources and use the core standards of training document. It's that we need to, as a community, empower ourselves to demand that it's used. The department can do so much, but we can do so much more. And finally, this may look like Chinese to some of you. If it does, you need to get a dictionary and learn it. Plurality, contestability, foundation trust. This is the new world of the NHS. And the new world of the NHS is challenging, it's demanding, and it's hard work. And it is up to us to make a difference and ensure that the LGBT population survive and prosper in it. Thank you.